leprechauns, fairies, trees, what do they really look like? I wrote the book about the leprechaun. And in that book we have some pictures of a leprechaun. The way society has begun to perceive, let's say, leprechauns. With the little hat and the little top coat and little boots and socks. But in reality, that's not really what they look like. So, since I've written that book, a lot of people ask, do I really see them? Yeah, I really did see them, but not that way. Or mostly not that way. I'll try to explain what they do, why they're here, and what they look like. And really, how a person communicates with them in a sense. And I think once you understand that, then you understand and can perceive when someone says they can see them, whether that's really true or whether they're just playing a game. Because once you understand what these beings really are, everything else starts to make sense. Once you understand why sometimes we can see them, then the whole procedure of why we don't see them, and why only few people maybe see them, all starts to make sense. And then it's not such a big mystery anymore. So, let me explain. The beings that we call leprechauns, they're not all the same, and they live various parts of the world, but they are also different in various parts of the world. Just like people are different. If you go to Africa, the people are different there, and they look different than in, let's say, India. And they're different in Canada than they are in India and Africa. We're still people in a sense, but we're a little different. We look a little different. Our shading's different. In Canada, for instance, we have a whole mixture of all different types of people from different countries and different walks of life. There's quite a mixture. So the same goes for these entities. What they, in a sense, are, they're beings that live mostly, these ones, particular ones, mostly in the forest. Usually fairly dense forest, fairly moist places. And the reason for that is that's where their food is. And their food consists of energy that trees and moss and certain type of roots and in roots, there's sometimes these little knots. They're like little balls or in roots. I don't know if you've seen much of tree roots when you really look at them. And when trees fall over, you'll see plants, other plants. And sometimes in these roots, they have these little balls. And these little balls, they have energy in them. They absorb this energy. That's what they eat. That's their food. As they do this, they also radiate out a form of energy, a form of vibration. This is the same as we eat and we go to the washroom. They, in a sense, radiate this out from them. The plants absorb this energy. Just like plants absorb carbon dioxide and exude oxygen, which we then intake oxygen and extrude carbon dioxide. It's the sort of the same thing with them. So, they like to stay in fairly moist areas. So where there's trees, you'll find them more in the valleys where there's a lot of moisture, even foggy places, a lot of rain, because that's where the energy is more plentiful. They will still spread out, but that's where you'll find them more plentiful. Just like you'll find humans more plentiful where there's food and in cities where food is accessible. While you go to a desert or very cold climates, you don't find as many humans. And the same thing goes with these beings. I'm never really sure whether to call them beings or entities, so I'll just probably switch back and forth. Now, there's all different kinds and variants of these entities. But the ones we kind of call leprechauns, they're a bit special in the sense that they're slightly more denser than some of the other beings that are around. And in size, if we could consider them in a size, they're a little bit bigger. So that makes them a little bit more accessible. In reality, if you were in the woods looking to see them, you would see them more as a misty cloud moving in shapes and literally going into the ground, out of the ground, through a tree, or into a tree and out of a tree. Their vibrational rate is just different than ours, which allows them to move through matter. Now, if you go in the woods, you can't really communicate with any one of them because they can perceive you, for one thing, more easily than we perceive them because we're more solid. And to them, a solid object vibrating in that certain level is in their ability to perceive, where we have a smaller limit of vibration that we see. Just like we hear only certain vibrations, and a dog can hear a higher level of vibration than we can. And so what they are able to perceive, we are in that perception, so they can see us quite well, where we have a bit more complication to see them. But because their vibration is a little closer to us, they're a little easier to perceive. Now, certain parts of the earth, they become much easier to perceive. And they're also more plentiful. These places, the vibration is more suitable for them, and the food source is more suitable for them. So you will find more of them there. It doesn't always have to be trees. It can be a very boggy place, like a lot of peat moss, boggy kind of thing. That is a very good food source for them. So, when we kind of perceive them, we perceive the ones that are closer in our vibration, and also, when we go into a place, the earth itself, with the rocks, the crystals, the minerals, and certain parts of the planet vibrate and radiate different sources of energy and different levels of vibration. When you're in there, in those places, these beings are easier to perceive. And sometimes we call those places power spots. So when you're in a place like that at a vibration, it makes it easier to perceive them. Now, I grew up in a place where near there's an energy source in the earth that radiates out. And that makes them easier to perceive when you're there. And that place was near a boggy place. Now, as I grew up, I was shunned by virtually everybody. Other people's kids were not allowed to play with me. They told their children that they were not allowed to play with me. So, I had very little human contact as I was growing up the first 9 years of my life. Extremely little, which means I spent my time in the forest looking for others to communicate with. It's just a natural thing. Automatically, I spent time in that place that had that right vibrational energy that made it a lot easier for me to perceive them. Also, there was a bit of a community there, so a large number. Now, the ones that we perceive in the form of leprechauns, this is the really interesting part, because think of it this way. We have what we call in our human history shamans, religious people, Buddhists who practice meditation, changing their vibration, practice seeing what's not normally perceived, hearing what's not normally heard, and so forth. They, in a sense, have the same thing. They have those who practice, who find humans interesting and want to study him, want to be closer to see how everything works. They practice. They learn to actually put themselves into a shape and then continue on from there to make themselves be perceived almost in a physical form. And some of them can take that to an extreme where they become lightly physical for short periods of time, so that you can actually see them virtually as a person there, but not quite as dense. Now, there's very few, of course, that master that degree, because it's just not something they all do. But those are the ones that generally make human contact. And the picture that most people carry around of what a leprechaun looks like with a hat, that was just an image that fit, one, their character, and two, it fit to what people could handle. In a sense, it was a look that was acceptable and didn't necessarily scare people and allowed them to approach people and have people approach them and not run from them. There are other beings that live on this planet that we can't see readily. They have forms, and some of these forms are not necessarily what we would call pretty. And if you saw them, you would think of them more as a monster, and you would be scared to death if you were in the woods by yourself and you saw them in their form. I mean, you'd be running. You'd think you were in a horror movie. See, that's kind of the problem with humans. We have this stigma about looks, and we perceive everything and recognize everything in a form. This is something they understand, because they don't, in their culture, recognize by form. They recognize by energy signature more than form. That's the best language I have. More, they recognize more by vibration, almost, you know, taste, smell, combined kind of thing, but more in a vibrational form than we do, or we recognize in a form. Because when you see a person, you recognize them because of their shape and form. That's not the way they function. But they understand, those ones who practice, they understand that that's how we perceive them. And so they, the ones that can, put themselves into that shape. Some will just put themselves into a shape. So if you stay in an area or bring yourself into a vibrational range where you can then perceive them, or allow your subconscious to open that part of you up that allows you to see them, they can put themselves into a familiar shape, some of them, not all of them, that then can be perceived by you, and also the same token creates a bit of a comfort zone. Then if the communication continues at another time, they put themselves back into that form for whatever length of time they can hold it at, and then you recognize them again as that being, because that's how we see. So, when you sit in the woods and you want to see them, the easiest is to remember that their true form is more of like a misty little cloud, anywhere from 2 to 3 feet in diameter. and it can expand and contract a little bit. That's really their shape. So, let's talk about communicating with them, in a sense. This is what amazes me sometimes when people try to talk to trees, and I sort of have to chuckle. And this goes the same with trees. Their understanding of life is different than ours because they live on the same planet, but they do and eat different things. And they don't have cars. They don't have to go to work. They don't have a cranky boss. They don't sleep, in a sense. They don't have to tuck themselves in a sense. They they don't have the things we have. They don't see the world as we see it. So the communication has to be a bit more on their level. Now, those that have practiced, let's say, become the shamans of their culture, the ones that have learned to communicate and understand how humans see things, they can communicate more readily and understand some of what we do. Why we, for instance, get into a vehicle and drive to a job and exchange money. That takes them quite a long time to learn and understand. And my leprechaun friend, and I'll tell you this, when I lived in Edmonton, I had a small apartment, and he spent a lot of time there, and he spent a lot of time at my workplace, which caused me a lot of problems, because I can sense him there and see him there, and it's kind of, I don't know how to explain it, it really makes you feel like a freak at the end, and also you sort of not really fit into either world properly. You don't fully fit into the physical world, and you're not fully in this non-physical world. So, when you're kind of vibrating that way where you can perceive, you can also perceive a lot of other things. Because that run in that same vibrational range. So it becomes very difficult, and it was a very difficult time. But that's where he learned a lot more of how we do things in human form. And then for a lot of years, he actually disappeared. Now, these are the ones we can sort of communicate more readily with. But as far as communication on our part with them, we sort of have to become more understanding of what kind of life they live. Their life is basically, in a sense, sort of searching for food. They have a community. They because they can move around, they don't, in a sense, have to walk. They can travel very quickly. They can go through a tree, into the ground. They don't travel very far into the ground, apparently. Only maximum about 8 to 10 feet. That's as deep as they will go. After that, there's a vibrational change, and it apparently doesn't suit them very well. You see, as you perceive them, the idea to communicate is really to allow what they are to come to you. In other words, perceive what they are. The same thing goes for a tree. I see people talking to a tree, and that's fine if you want to talk to a tree about your life, about your family, about your income, about environmental issues, but a tree that doesn't understand any of that at all and really means nothing to them. Nothing at all. They see things differently, totally differently. And it's not that difficult to begin to perceive how a tree sees things. And one thing I should tell you also, trees are extremely slow because their timeline is much different from ours. Totally, totally different timeline. Their communication form Think of it as a stream of a piece of communication. It's a long, 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 long piece. And it'll say one thing. Where you're babbling on and babbling on and babbling on, switching subject, switching subject, switching subject. Trees don't switch subjects. They have subject. So, you dig a hole, 6 to 8 inches deep in very deep moss. You take your socks off, your shoes, your socks off. You stand in the hole. You fill it back in into, and this should be in a fairly peat mossy, deep, rich soil. And then you stand there. Stretch your arms out and stand there. Now, feel the earth. Feel the sky, because they live in two places at once. In the earth, and in the sky. And then you begin to allow to perceive just how a tree really, in a sense, thinks. And once you realize it's a long drawn out thing, singularity and long singularity, long thoughts on one thing. It's like eating a piece of chocolate and really enjoying that one piece for a very long time. That's how a tree is, because their time span is different. Just like a bumblebee is very fast and very quick and switches from one thing to the next very quickly. A tree is a very long drawing out. Each one of these beings in the forest, they're all different. They all have, in a sense, their own timeline. And they all have their own essence, in a sense, and how they live and what's important to them. Just like people and animals. We're all different. We all live differently and we all think differently and we all do things differently. Some of us move very quickly and we switch from one thing to another. Other people, they do things very slowly, very, you know, to the point, very focused. And so these are all different. Most of them you would perceive until you can look at a monster in the eye and not run. Most of the ones you will perceive will be in a misty nature, kind of like a misty cloud. Some of them, these are not leprechauns, they're different ones. It can be very small, very tiny. Some of them live on energy that is right where they, we have what some people call an aura, which is like lights around our body. But there's also a little fine layer of energy around. It's minute, probably that of a thickness of a razor blade, and that hangs around plants and leaves. And they're very tiny beings. That doesn't make them less important or, you know, less smart. They're just very tiny and they live on that. It's like nectar to them. I can't tell you everything because I don't fully understand them. But they're, in a sense, a lot like a bumblebee. They tend to move more quickly. Their thoughts are very quick, in a sense. So what you would perceive from them would be something very fast and sincere and direct and focused. It wouldn't be something stretched out. So we're getting on 24 minutes, so I'm going to quit this and start again as part 2.